Welcome to the Intertidal Talks podcast. I am Kendra, marine biologist and your host. This podcast is meant to teach, inform, and entertain you about all things marine science and conservation. If you are a marine scientist or advocate with a story to share, you can contact me at intertidaltalks@gmail.com. Want to join our marine science community? Join us at patreon.com/kendi_marinebio. And hello, welcome back to the podcast. I have with me Carissa Cabrera, right? Okay. So yeah, why don't you introduce yourself, where you're from, what you do, just anything interesting, really.
Okay, thanks for having me on. It's great to virtually meet through Zoom, finally. But my name's Carissa Cabrera, and I grew up in Phoenix, Arizona, without an ocean nearby. And are you from Phoenix too?
I'm from Arizona.
Wait, what? Wait, are you from Phoenix or what? What area of it?
I'm in Goodyear, so like I just say I'm in Phoenix.
Oh, that's amazing! Yeah, wow, small world. How did I not know that? But yeah, I grew up in Phoenix, Arizona, and my pronouns are she and her. And I ended up here. I'm based in Hawaii now, and I ended up here because I went to graduate school here. And ended up staying because I fell in love with Oahu. And right now I'm doing freelance marine conservation education. So I'm working under a grant project right now with my partner. And I stepped away from my full-time job a few months ago on Oahu.
That's awesome. So education background. So did you get your bachelor's in Arizona?
Yes. So I, of course, and you have to tell me if this was the case for you too. I just wanted to go to California and do my, and get marine bio, my bachelor's at like one of the UC schools. And I ended up having a scholarship that I couldn't refuse. And I went to Tucson, Arizona and got my bachelor's at the University of Arizona. So they didn't have a marine science program when I went there, but I knew that I was wanting to do marine bio. So when I met with my advisor, I let them know, like, this is my path, but there's no like opportunity. And they told me that I didn't need to have a marine bio bachelor's, which was a huge relief to me. And I ended up majoring in ecology and evolutionary biology. And Ooh. Then there was like one or two, like there was a marine biology professor, and then there was an oceanography professor, and they worked really hard to get a minor. And so when I was a sophomore in college, they launched the minor, and then I was able to get a marine science minor in addition to my major. So that was pretty exciting. Because I felt like I wasn't able to, I didn't know if I was going to be able to find my way to marine bio with my undergraduate career, but it ended up being all right. And then I went straight into graduate school. I knew I wanted to get my master's, but I was, a little hesitant about a PhD. And so I applied everywhere, and HPU, a small private school on Oahu, ended up accepting me. And at this point I was 22, and I wasn't sure if I wanted to do a strong thesis route or mm-hmm. An applied project, because I had a huge passion for education and outreach. And luckily they had a choice at HPU, which is one of the reasons why I chose them. So I ended up choosing the applied track, and I still did research, and I ended up getting published later, but I never did a thesis. So I was never great at statistics, which was one of the reasons why I didn't want to do it.
I almost went to U of A actually, because.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'd wanted, my dream school was some school in California. It wasn't one of the UCs. It was, I don't even remember what the name is. I've said it in other podcasts, but I really want to go to
Landing.
Yeah, it was just some school. I think they had a program, honestly, I don't remember. But that, besides Eckerd, that was my dream school, but I could not afford it at all.
Yeah.
And so if I didn't get into this to BYU Hawaii, I was going to go to U of A and just do a bio major, because that's what I got into, was their bio program. But luckily I was able to get into BYU Hawaii, and I got out of Arizona, which I really wanted.
That's so exciting. I know it's such a hard transition to go there to Hawaii, but I feel like I meet a lot of people from Arizona here who are like, this is my home now in Hawaii.
Yeah. And it was super, I mean, I loved moving, but mm-hmm. I always tell people, I'm like, Hawaii is not all it is. Like, it seems to be like, you're so far from your family. Mm-hmm. I was lucky that my family could afford to like bring me home for the holidays. Yeah. But I know so many others that literally don't see their family for like a year or more at a time. So I always caution people when they're like, Hawaii or nothing. I'm like, think about the cons.
Think about it. I know. And like your first Christmas in Hawaii, you're like, this doesn't, I don't know if this feels like Christmas. It's so warm. But I ended up getting, it was really motivating for me to go see my family. So I ended up getting like a waitressing job because I try to see them at least once a year. So
yeah.
But I've maintained that since I moved here. I think it's been about 5 years now.
Which is good. That's great. Mm-hmm. So like, what are some of the research projects you've worked on, like through your master's, when you were in your bachelor's? Like,
yeah. So like I said, at U of A, they had like a really small, but it was growing, like marine science, like footprint, I guess, in the campus. And really what they ended up doing was they had a club, a marine conservation club that I ended up being part of and then moving on to eBoard. And it is kind of what led me to education and outreach. We would like go into schools and teach kids about squid and sharks and all this stuff. And I remember thinking that was like so fun. And I did work in some labs at U of A. Like I worked in a dendroecology lab, which is for like tree rings. And that was pretty fun. Like that was under a grad student. And then I worked at a planetarium, which was mostly like, once again, outreach, like teaching kids about the marine discovery lab. And, but there wasn't that much like oceanography, marine bio research that I actually did in undergrad. And I remember thinking like, oh, this is going to come back and bite me. But it was okay because I was able to have so much experience through the club that I joined. So extracurriculars really benefited me. And I learned how to run a group of people and an organization and fundraise. And it was probably some of the most valuable skills that I still use today. So I was part of that club for 3 years. And then I, once again, was like torn about research. So when I applied to HPU and when I started, I was like, should I do policy? Like, where do I see myself? And of course, I wanted to work with megafauna because they're so charismatic megafauna. It is so basic. But I ended up, you know, you had to pick your project pretty short after you started. It was only a 2-year program, which was really attractive to me because, you know, if you do a thesis, that could be in the United States, it could be about 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
So I ended up interning at NOAA's Hawaiian Islands Humpback Whale National Marine Sanctuary. And at this point, I think it was 2016. So the North Pacific humpback whale stock had just been delisted from endangered to threatened. Mm-hmm. And they had to, you know, make a management plan about the delisting. And I was working alongside another graduate student. We were just going through like all of the publications about that stock to try to get some good estimates about numbers and kind of consolidating it all so that the staff at NOAA could have like a repository of information that they could just easily reference instead of having to sift through all of the research. And then there was an administration change and we ended up that project ended up being halted indefinitely. So I was left kind of thinking like, I know that like government can be slow moving and I want to make sure that I have a project for my master's. And so we stepped away from that. The other graduate student did too. And I found the UH Stranding Lab, which at the time wasn't with UH. Mm-hmm. It was still affiliated with HPU. And so for those listening that don't know, stranding, when a dolphin or a whale ends up beaching themselves for some reason and is out of habitat. And so this stranding lab responded to cetacean strandings and then conducted necropsies to figure out, to try to gather some clues about what was wrong. And I ended up working for them for the rest of my graduate program, doing my project at that lab and then even moving into education role at that lab. And once again, so wonderful people I met, wonderful skills I developed. It also taught me like what I liked and didn't like, which is so important when you're going down your marine bio path, because there's so many like niche fields that you can do inside of it. And you really want to make sure that you like what you're doing. I think that's really important.
So did you ever like handle a stranded animal in Hawaii?
Yeah. And it is a delicate subject. So you want to be you obviously like, you need to be so respectful because of how much reverence these animals have in Hawaiian culture. And also because, you know, they could have just necessarily passed away. And so, and also depending on how, you know, fresh the animal is, you can get a lot of information about it. And so quick response times is such a big component of stranding response and being able to transport it in a way that doesn't compromise any data that you might be able to collect, but also doesn't compromise, you know, your health, because some of them may have passed away from like zoonotic diseases that can transfer to humans. So it was pretty exciting. My first stranding ever was actually a mass stranding. So it was very overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And I was just kind of thrown into it. And every other stranding after that seemed easy because it was only one.
What species was it?
It was short fin pilot whales.
Oh,
great. You know, they're very social, which is why they seem to group strand.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which just breaks my heart because I'm like, some of you might, maybe something wasn't necessarily wrong, but the social bonds between them are really fascinating to me too.
Yeah. So you keep talking about, you've talked about how you now are working on grant with like an education outreach program. Yeah. Let's talk about that. What is it? What's it called? What's the whole background mojo?
So I guess before the stranding lab and kind of how I got to this point, because grant writing is a skill that like is so, can be really hard to get.
Yeah.
And I ended up leaving the lab for a paid position. I hope that listeners know that a lot of experience is unpaid in marine bio, especially when you're starting out. Yes. And I moved to be a programs manager for a nonprofit that worked with seabirds, sea turtles, and Hawaiian monk seals in Hawaii. And because, you know, nonprofits, usually small teams, and there's a lot to be done. So there's actually a large opportunity to like develop new skills. So I kind of just would raise my hand and always say yes. And I ended up learning how to write grants through that nonprofit, which came to benefit me now. So when I was with them for about a year and a half, and I realized I wanted to do my own thing. And I kind of just, this grant just popped up in my inbox one day. It was during COVID-19. So it's a grant to support virtual education because teachers were kind of just thrown into having to teach classrooms over Zoom and maybe didn't have all the resources. So it's about supporting teachers with resources. And the project that I proposed was called Ocean Connections, which is STEM curriculum for middle schoolers. So I think that, you know, it's really hard to get young kids and middle schoolers' attention over Zoom. And so you really need like engaging content. And, you know, they can well spend like 15 hours on TikTok a day, but you're like, what are they so captivated by, right? And so I wanted to propose something that, you know, was really fun for them. And so Ocean Connections is video lessons that are super dynamic and like engaging and have a lot of movement and really valuable lessons. As well as like discussions and activities to help teach kids, you know, not just the importance of the ocean and the health of the ocean, but, you know, how to solve the climate crisis. And I think that's so important because I was taught what climate change is in school, but I wasn't taught how to help. I had to learn that stuff myself. And teaching these kids, you know, how to make a really fun social media post or teaching them how to write an email to a company. Those are things that like we do now to help the ocean. And so I really wanted to kind of not just provide some educational curriculum, but provide them like a toolkit of tools that they can use that they're going to need to use for the rest of their lives. So Ocean Connections is totally free and it's for middle school classrooms. It can be changed, you know, depending on what the teacher wants, but it's 5 days, 5 topics. And, you know, one topic focuses on, you know, climate literacy, like really just learning what climate change is. Like I was even learning some stuff when I was researching this, like,
yeah,
what types of fossil fuels there are, where they actually came from. And then, you know, we focus on plastic and we focus on wildlife extinction and we focus on solutions all throughout. So not just like the renewable energy that people know, but also like, you know, how to write that letter or what tidal energy is, or just all of these tools that I think we're going to see more and more attention go towards in the next couple decades.
Yeah. So I laughed when you were taught climate change at school. I was never taught what climate change was in Arizona.
Yeah. I guess I would say college, because in the video lessons, I'm like, I didn't learn these concepts till college, and they're like going to be able.
And
to
I went to like one of the Arizona charter schools, so I don't know if like maybe it's in the public school curriculum, but I definitely didn't know about. I'd heard like global warming, but I didn't know what it meant.
No, it was not taught in my high school at all.
I wasn't like a denier. I wasn't like, that's not a thing. I literally just was like, oh, I've heard global warming on like a TV show.
Yeah.
And it was usually like a laughing point. Like, I think there's like a Modern Family environmental episode that was like funny. And I didn't know anything about like if plastics were bad. I didn't know like literally anything. Going into college, people will ask me like, what'd you do in high school to prepare for your degree? What'd you do? Like,
nothing.
I didn't do anything. I was planning on going to school for theater. I wasn't even planning on doing marine biology. So, and same goes for like my conservation. I learned all that. I want to say basically like my second year of college is when I started.
Yeah.
And I did nothing beforehand, didn't know anything.
I know students are always asking like, what can I do in high school? And I was like, I mean, you could volunteer, but like, it's not gonna, it'll help you, but you know, I didn't do much and it didn't really affect me that much. So it also, when you're in high school, it's hard to think outside of all of that.
Also enjoy high school.
I know.
So I tell people, I'm like, I know you're really excited, but like, enjoy it. Like, volunteer maybe a bit. Like, I volunteered on the weekends at a zoo, my senior year. Didn't go on a resume. It was just for me, but like, enjoy high school. Cause when you're in college, things get like serious.
Things get like hectic. I know. I also get a lot of questions that are like, what about chemistry and like those hard sciences? And I was like, I don't use chemistry in my day to day. I mean, it was
hard. It really depends what you do. I recommend people. I'm like, oh, well, maybe take it. If you know you struggle in chemistry, you might want to try it more in high school to get prepared for when you take it in college, because it's usually required for the degree.
Yeah,
it doesn't mean you'll use it. I really don't use a ton of chemistry, but it was required for me to get my degree. But it may help you in those classes. You use it. Because not really. I helped a little bit with some genetic stuff, but it was like making gels, which you can just learn how to do that and just get it into like habit of just getting the gel made. One of my coworkers, she works really heavily lab work. She's amazing. She'll be on eventually, but her chemistry use definitely comes in handy. But for me, it didn't. And I know other people who didn't even want to work chem at all, but then ended up after graduating, taking a job in a chem lab just because they needed a job.
Yeah.
So it could come in handy, but it's just like, I always just recommend maybe trying the classes that you may know you'll struggle with. Like, I took 2 years of calc in high school and that helped me in college. Exactly. I don't use calculus at all.
Nope. Me neither.
But it helped me pass the class.
I don't even use the concepts. Like with chemistry, like obviously the in-depth concept, like the foundation I use.
Yeah.
But like calc, I've never used it.
Chem's handy just because you have to take a chem lab, which then you just get lab skills, which that's what I appreciate about. I hate chem class. I don't ever, I think, use anything from the class portion, but from lab portions, I have gone back on those skills because I worked in a lab and I helped with some projects.
Yeah. And I remember being like so concerned because my brain just doesn't work well with physics content. And I remember being so concerned it was going to, you know, come back and bite me. I like had a lot of trouble passing the class in college and ended up taking it at like a local community college because I was so concerned about it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, good. It's fine. Yeah. It's fine. My understanding of it is with the ocean is good enough. And I need to understand everything else.
Yeah. And then, so unlike this curriculum, I helped write some online curriculum stuff for One Ocean, recently, and it can be really hard to like navigate your, like the audience that you're teaching this to. Like, I know I was like, I did one on shark conservation and shark issues, and I had to be like, what do I tell? Like, how do I navigate what a middle school knowledge is versus I did elementary, middle, high, and college. And it was hard because I was like, how do I talk about conservation without being like overly graphic, but still emphasizing a point?
Exactly.
How did you maybe navigate that? How did that feel?
Yeah, it's really hard because you want people to know the severity of some of these topics, but you also want them to feel inspired and because the solutions are there. So you have to find this balance and like totally going off what you're saying, knowing your audience, because we've gotten some emails from teachers that are like, well, I teach fourth grade. And we're like, well, I don't know if this will be actually be the best fit for you, because even though it's only a few years different, difference in age, the concepts are really for students who are able to understand this. Like, for example, we talk about, you know, like how plastic has entered our food chain, and that can be really alarming for people. And it is alarming. It's something that we should really all be concerned about, but I don't want people to leave the lesson, especially students, and be like, the world is on fire, even though you know, we do talk about wildfires. So it's been hard for us. We've been like refining the script over and over and over. Sometimes one of the best things for me is like, I'll have like a fresh set of eyes look at it. And then I'll have a fresh set of eyes that doesn't know anything about these topics look at it and be like, how does this make you feel? Or if I introduce a really like serious, like gloomy topic, I'll try to, you know, focus a lot on, you know, the uplifting solutions like right after. So they're introduced to something that maybe makes them feel something, and then they're inspired. So it's such a delicate balance because, you know, there's so much urgency with these issues, but you don't want to be like, drop everything and do everything. But then you kind of want to be like, please go home and write to your representatives.
Yeah. Well, that was one thing is then, you know, talking about like shark finning, and I was like, I want to show graphic images, but like, so we use like illustration, but then going on to solutions, it can be really hard because these are kids and they're younger. Like, you're doing elementary school or middle school. I did elementary, middle, and it was hard. I was like, what do I tell kids? Like,
what do I do?
Like, mom, don't eat fish. Or so I had to like come up with solutions that were garnered towards the classroom. Like, one of the ones I came up, like I put on, was have your class adopt a shark from all these different organizations.
Oh, that's good.
Or maybe tell your, like, if the they wanted to make some kind of like pamphlet that they could maybe take home to kind of share with their family as well, about like how some seafood consumption, like about how that can harm sharks and how we can get better seafood. So I was like, how do I not, like, these are young kids, it's so hard to like, you can't just tell them like don't eat seafood because they're not the ones buying it.
Yeah. And I did, I'm like, do I want to go into the like nuanced detail of sustainable seafood certifications? And I ended up deciding not to, because I think I ended up my messaging being like, it's important to know where your seafood comes from.
Yeah. And at that age, I think that's great. It just gets like a little seed planted. And as they grow up, like maybe they do go to the grocery store and they're like, I wonder if this seafood is sustainable. Like all those kind of questions. And it can grow into something, but at such a young age, it's so like, I felt so much pressure to be like, I don't know what, like, I don't want to put something that like a parent would be like, you can't tell my kid to like
what to do.
Yeah. You can't tell my kid not to just eat seafood. I'm like,
especially like another thing is like, cause we talk a lot about like emissions and things like that. And I didn't want to tell kids like have a plant-based diet, because you can't tell people that, but it's becoming more and more normalized nowadays. So I'm like, okay, meatless Monday is like not even a intimidating thing anymore. We can just talk about that.
Well, like one thing with when I did it was we helped make like worksheets they can fill out, or coloring books, and like putting knowledge on that. So if they show their family, it's like eating like meatless Mondays help reduce your like those kind of topics. That's something I found. But since it's all virtual, like, you had to make videos? Was there stuff like that? Like,
yeah. So what we're doing is the first components video, which is what we're like really deep into right now, because this is going to be available the first week of April. So we've got about a month left of work, and then for the second component, it's a discussion. So the class gets to talk about, you know, the lesson, their thoughts, no right answers, no wrong answers, and then an activity. And so the activity varies by day, but yeah, like for example, they get to like adopt, you get to adopt a species on the IUCN website that's endangered or threatened, and then they get to learn about it. So that's like a worksheet. But then, you know, part of their critical thinking part of that activity is they need to they need to learn how climate change is affecting this animal, not just like what the main threats are listed on the IUCN website, but actually articulate how is the climate crisis going to affect this population. And then they have to look up an organization that that's helping this animal and learn more about that. So I'm trying to be like, because it's hard to talk about extinction, especially at like the rate it's at right now. And so, you know, maybe they do adopt a shark and they look up the shark finning, and then they find that there's an organization helping, you know, transition shark fishermen to tourism. And I actually think that's a real organization.
But, Project Hue.
Yes. How do you say it?
Hue. I think that's how I've heard it.
Yeah. And like a compassionate source as well. So like, I'm hoping that kids, you know, they take these problems and they view them as like obstacles they want to overcome instead of feeling like, you know, crippled by it. Cause that was something I totally dealt with in college, like feeling like these problems were so enormous and they were all on my shoulders. And it took me a long time to, you know, start just picking and choosing the positives to take with me, so it didn't affect my daily life.
Yeah. So that's great. Getting kids to actively like be thinking and finding other solutions instead of just kind of like throwing it out there. Mm-hmm. And so you talked about how grant writing helped you achieve this.
Yes.
Can you kind of talk about like how you learned about grant writing? I know I've done grant writing and I work for an NGO. So like grant writing obviously is a big deal. That's the only way we fund pretty much our projects.
I wish it was emphasized more in school, don't you?
I do. I mean, I feel like I was kind of lucky. I have an English minor, and so I'm really good at writing. And so I kind of just looked stuff up and figured out grant writing on my own. And it was still hard. Like there's so much that goes into it, but I definitely am more inclinated to writing. So it's like, but I know so many people hate writing, but I always am like, grant writing is so, it's a good skill to have. Maybe you don't ever use it, but even just knowing, it's like, how did you learn? Was it just thrown into the fire and you learned on the spot? Like, were there resources you really liked
that you
recommend to someone?
Being inclined to writing is definitely an important part of it. You can write in a compelling way, but I have seen grants funded by people who were not great writers. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely a way to do it, especially if there's a need for your project. Mm-hmm. So I was hired on to that nonprofit to run the education program and then to create and the framework and run a marine debris program. So my plate was like really full at this point. But I knew that I ultimately really liked working like remotely, and I liked working from a computer, and I liked, you know, building my own schedule and stuff like that. And so I was like, grant writing seems like something that I want to learn. And I had seen my previous boss at the Stranding Lab write grants, and just felt like, you know, as you get older, you learn that like so much marine conservation is funded through grants. It's what I wish was spoken more about when I was in college. Like, these are how these projects become a reality. And so how you pitch that project through your grant really makes all the difference.
Yeah.
So I raised my hand, and you know, there's community grants and there's federal grants, and there's the community grants, you know, often are shorter. You can be a little bit more casual with your language. And then the federal grants are a lot more technical. Yeah. You know, there's research projects as well. And so I said I wanted to be involved in it. And because I was able to help contribute and work with someone else, or just really support them, was my first grant, was to support them. I got to see examples of grants that were funded and examples of grants that weren't. And that was the best thing that I could have seen, because I wasn't drawing assumptions. You know, there's a lot of reasons why great projects don't get funded, but I was able to be like, okay, they give you feedback when you're not funded, especially if it's a federal grant. And so you're able to see like, oh, this is why they wanted more information in this area. And so, you know, I was given one, it was a federal grant project to do on my own for the marine debris program that I was running. And I was so intimidated by it, but I just, we went back and forth on drafts so many times. I worked with my supervisor really closely, and you know, we knew how competitive it was, because it was a national grant. So people were applying all over the country. And, you know, 6 months later, the turnaround time is so long. We ended up getting it. And I remember looking back on it and thinking that, one of the reasons we got it is because there was so much detail. And so being able to say, like, here's all the reasons why this project is. So you look back on past research, you look back on the information already known about the topic that your project's about, and you use that kind of as your rationale. And if you have like a really good rationale for why your project's needed, and then the project proposal is pretty, you know, detailed, you're not saying like, we're going to do STEM curriculum. It's like actually broken down, like in our National Geographic grant for Ocean Connections. They didn't say we had to do this, but we broke it down by day. We were like, day one's going to be climate change. Day two is going to be wildlife. And I think that that was beneficial for them because it came off like we knew what we wanted to do. And that's, if they could just fund it, it would happen. So definitely practice, definitely so much time reading primary papers, which is such a skill that I think is valuable for students to learn. And then being able to take all that scientific information and turn it into like a reason why your project needs to be funded. Like this will happen if it's not funded, I think it was something that was really beneficial to me. But if I didn't have examples, I would have written like an essay. I don't even know what I would have written. how was your experience learning how to write grants?
Yeah, I used a lot of just like online articles that I read and read examples, just ones online, like good, bad, and whatnot.
Yeah, there's helpful stuff online.
Yeah, there's tons of stuff. I wonder if there's stuff on Skillshare, if people want to go look at that. But I read a lot of articles. I looked at different kinds of templates. I looked at like the breakdown of different kinds of projects, because like you could have different projects that require different emphasis, mm-hmm. kind of a thing. If it's like all those different things. And it also helps because to a degree, like if you go get a master's, some people have to write for their own grants,
funding,
money for their master's. That's why I tell people, I'm like, if you're going to pursue more, you really may want to learn the skill. Because I've had a lot of friends that had never written grants before, and then we're applying for masters and they're like, oh, I need to write for grants because like I need help to pay for my project.
Cool. Yeah.
But they never experienced it. So I ended up, well, I have some articles saved. They're more for like NGO grants. That's what I do, but it may help with your personal grant, at least finding sites that have it. So the internet was my resource.
Yeah. Same. And like the NGO grants are different. And I don't want people listening to think like you're just given a blank paper and they're like, write a grant. A lot of grants end up being like, your first part's going to be, you know, why you think it's needed. Your second part's going to be like these components. Your third part's going to be like how you're going to track your results. Like, mm-hmm. so they give you a framework, which is, it's like an outline pretty much. So it's not as intimidating once you start getting the practice.
Yeah. And it's being with all the detail oriented is like the biggest thing I found with writing grants. Like one thing I'm always like, we need to know the budget and how we're breaking down everything, because they want that laid out. Kind of may depend on your grant, but for like our projects, I'm like, we need a rough idea of like what money's going where, what we need beforehand. Like we're not just $10,000 and then not explain why you want $2,000. Mm-hmm. How much is going to be going towards like supplementing my work versus paying for the actual project?
Yeah. And that
part
was
is paying us.
Yeah. And that was another thing that happened with the Nat Geo grant, was like, they were very, they said in their pitch when people were applying, like a lot of this can go to salaries, but you have to know exactly what you're going to buy for it. So mm-hmm. 3 months ago, we had to know we're going to buy a green screen, we're going to buy this microphone, and we have to know like the exact cost of it. So it requires, detail-oriented planning. And then it's almost like then if you don't get it, which has happened to me many times, you're like, wow, I had that down to the detail. Like, and then you can maybe use that project that's tweaked in a different way for a different proposal. And then so reapplying is not, you can reapply with the same project that's maybe enhanced a little bit and then get funded the next time, which is something that I thought was really fascinating about the whole grant process.
Yeah. Knowing like the breakdown of, I think I wrote grants for one NGO and they were like, oh, we haven't gotten anything in the past. And I like took a look and I was like, well, nothing's like really detailed. And when I asked them like, well, what do you want from this grant? How much money? They were like, I don't know. I was like, that might be why. Yeah. Like, I don't want to seem like I'm like really like getting on your case, on your NGO, but you really need to know the breakdown of what you're asking from them and what, how you're going to be using it. We can't just say, oh, I want this much money to do this project. Like, I need to know how much is going to be paying you, your workers. Are we buying anything? What is it? Mm-hmm. And all the breakdown. And I really felt like I was like grinding on them, and that they maybe felt like I was getting too purposeful. I was like, no, I really need to know this to write you like
it's for their best interest.
And that's one thing I always tell people, like, they're so detail. Like, you really need to know the details of your project. It isn't just like a cover letter where you're like, I really want this, and this is why I'm qualified. You need to break it down.
Another thing that people don't necessarily have figured out during the application process is like, you have to find a way to measure your success quantitatively.
Yeah.
And so like for this one, we're like, we're going to reach at least 500 students. Like, so we have that goal. Also, obviously we want to reach more, but I had to know that back in November when we applied, because you know, the people who are giving you money, they want to see that the project was a success and that the money was worthwhile. So at the end of a grant period, you end up submitting a grant report, and where you get to, you know, brag about everything you did.
Yeah. Which is great. So, and was there any like difficulty with grants and COVID? I've heard from a few organizations that they feel like because of COVID, there aren't as many grants, or can't qualify because grants may want something done at a certain time, but COVID restricts a lot of that. Obviously, yours is digital, so that helps.
Yeah, it was. But, you know, during COVID, I was still with my full-time position with an NGO. So I was looking for grants all the time with that, and it was all going to COVID support. So we had to diversify our fundraising. We ended up switching over to doing more like online fundraising, corporate sponsorships, things like that. Mm-hmm. And we just had to step away from grants for a little bit, which totally understand, it was a crisis. I knew the funding needed to be allocated elsewhere. But you just have to kind of be innovative and savvy and be like, we got to find money elsewhere. Cause it's, you know, a never ending hamster wheel with nonprofits of where the next money is going to come from.
So with Ocean Connections, how can listeners, maybe teachers who are listening, find this, access it? Like, what's the best way to get involved with Ocean Connections?
So everybody can, the company that this is under, my company, is called the Conservationist Collective. And if you go to theconservationistcollective.com, we have a lot of, you know, ocean resources and educational resources, and you can send us an inquiry through that website. There's also, our email is on the website as well. And there's also more information about the project. Like, if you want to hear us talk about it in depth, or if you want like a downloadable PDF about, you know, what the curriculum is going to have in it, that can all be found on the conservationistcollective.com.
Perfect. And what other advice? Oh, and all that will be linked in the description. That's what I was going to say that I forgot.
Cool. Thank you.
That website, I will link it in the description of the podcast episode. And so now, what advice would you give to an aspiring marine scientist, conservationist, or even just environmentalist?
Yeah, well, I think we touched on a lot today, which was super great, like grant writing and, you know, knowing that you can be in a landlocked undergrad. But my thing that I always tell students is like, you really should say yes to everything and develop skills that set you apart. And like, I think this was touched on a little bit in your episode with Jordan as well. Like, you want, there's so many people love marine bio and it's amazing, but you want to be able to set yourself apart as a student or as an applicant. So you want to develop skills that, you know, are really useful. Like, for example, Jordan's skills with drones and photography, or having really strong quantitative skills in R and learning how to code, or even like, I feel really confident in how I'm able to tailor communication to different audiences. And I know that that's really applicable, especially for NGOs. So think about what you like and what you're good at and how you can, you know, harness that to be something that's super, you know, unique and, you know, valuable. So that only comes with saying yes to maybe unpaid projects or things that, you know, weren't on your plate before, but you're going to find value from them no matter what. And if I didn't do that, I know I wouldn't be where I am today. So definitely be a yes person And yeah, yes person. Yeah, just say yes. And you know, everyone's bad at something before they're good at it. So don't be too hard on yourself.
Yeah, that was me with grant writing. I just saw someone be like, can someone help me write a grant? And I was like, sure. I've yeah. never, I know about it, never done it, but I feel like my English minor might help.
Yeah.
And I picked it up pretty, I mean, I, of course, like I'm not perfect at it, but it mm-hmm. was something I was like, I have no idea, but I'm just going to try this.
Yeah.
And there's no harm. Even if I failed, it was like, meh.
And I'm sure that like at the time period, you were like, oh, this English minor, how is this going to intersect with what I'm trying to do? And it did. So just know that like the stuff you like ends up really helping you out.
I got it. I did an English minor because I get A's in English really easily. And that was and it worked. And now I am actually using my English skills.
Yeah, all the work. So it's so helpful.
So lastly, where can listeners find you on social media? You talk about your website and your company, but anything else you want to plug?
Yeah. So my website's definitely for our larger projects, but I'm always putting out like educational content on my social media handles, social media platforms. And my handle is Carissa and Climate on TikTok and Instagram. So, you know, always finding
TikTok, everyone,
always finding topics to rant about. So
you're doing a Southern Residence like video series right now on TikTok. People gotta go watch that.
There's so many threats. I was like, how deep do I want to go into this? But yeah, I love the marine bio TikTok niche that I'm in. And I love your account too. So it was so awesome to connect. And I appreciate you letting me have the platform to talk about ocean connections.
No, of course. That's my goal with the podcast, is people can just reach out and be like, hey, I have something to share.
I'm yeah.
Like, perfect. Come on.
Come on. Please. Yeah. Hopefully one day I end up in the Pacific Northwest seeing those individuals.
Oh yeah, they've been around
last week,
which is awesome. I know J-Pod's been seen a couple times, and there was a super pod where we saw the new baby last week. So
that's so exciting.
I don't know if they're still here, but they've been around, which is nice.
Yeah, that's amazing. I bet you love your work. So well, if I ever end up there, I will DM you.
Yes, and then we can go diving.
Yeah. Not in a dry suit.
No, I think there's like extra suits and places you can rent stuff. It's perfect.
Perfect. Awesome. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Aloha.